the thing about the Mantastic experience is that we have a specialist for every occasion. We want to know what's going on in the dating world? What we did was we went out there and we got my man's right here, Bucks, who is 25, who is in the dating world. Bucks, you're a single man, am I correct?
Single man, yes I am.
Yo, give us the weather out there. What's happening right now?
Now females wants to sit here and decide where you want to go, or wants to sit there and bring out a price range for a place for us to go. Well, I feel as though that's not the proper way to go. If a man wants to take you out, he's gonna take you out according to his budget. Right? The fact of dating is to get to know the person, not to sit there and also to have a good time, but the place don't matter, is the experience that matters the most.
Why don't you shut it down? Because I'm thinking, you know, and I'm from a different generation. I'm telling you, yo, we doing two drinks and you're going to enjoy my company and my cologne.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that work.
So you know what it is? Is the fact that, yes, as a leader, I am one of those ones that be like, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. And that's it. Because at the end of the day, I'm the one that has to sit there, pay for it. I'm the one that has to sit there, organize it. Because as a man, you know, I am interested in the female, right? So I have to show that I'm interested in it. But the case of the matter is, a lot of females have dated men that don't show that leadership quality. And because they don't show that leadership quality when they were dating those men, or those men didn't show it to the females, right? It came to a point now where you sit there and you try to show it. Now they feel as though they're attacked. And because they're attacked, because a female feels like they're attacked, they go back and try to give you a rebuttal. Why are you talking to me like that? Why are you trying to dictate everything? Why are you trying to sit here and be and act like you run the show?
Let me jump in, because what it sounds like is that you're saying that there's been a role reversal. So you're saying the women are more masculine and the men are more feminine? Is that...
Yes. Yes, and that's the case. Not for all men, but for some men play the back role while the women like to take the front role.
What Bucks is saying, it kind of changes that dynamic. So now the women are going out there trying to be the money winners and doing everything.
And because those role reversals that you're saying impacts what Mr. Bucks is going through.
Right, so Cabo Fragrance, jump in here with a special guest. Right. What's your opinion?
I had this conversation the other day, and perfect. Because there's so many single mothers, right, that the father's not there, right? That's all, say if it's talking about a girl, that's all she sees. She sees her mother doing everything. So her mentality is, I'm a woman. I saw my mom do anything, everything. So I guess I do everything. And then you got the boys that are raised with just single mothers, no father in their life. And they go, I see my mom do everything. My mom does everything. So now when they look for a woman, some of them, they look for a woman and they expect her to do everything. So it's a psychological aspect that goes behind all of that.
Talk to females and... most of them have the same upbringing. They don't have a father in their house, right? The father moved out, and now they have to basically fend for themselves, right? Which, in turn, causes them to bring in masculine energy. They feel as though they could talk. And talking to females is probably one of the most... is difficult as of right now due to the fact that in New York, per se, females move a lot more masculine than ever. You sit there and talk to one, they'd be like, oh, what you talking about? Or what you doing? Or, you know, the aggression and the tone and the tonality that they have while they talk, right, is a lot more aggressive than what you would expect from a feminine woman.
Oh, C Square, you're known for smacking people in your wallet when they got out of line. When you hear what Bucks is saying, What's your thought?
First off, Bucks, I appreciate you just coming on and telling the truth, because you're confirming a lot of what we were suspecting. So mad props for you just coming and being authentic. My question is this, bro. If you recognize, and I say you, the collective view, not just you personally, Bucks, but if you recognize that that's the challenge, it's not what you'd like, it's not the kind of relationship you want where you're constantly dealing with this aggression, this masculine energy, why not just go toward a population where that doesn't exist? You know, and I know that, you know, then that spills out a whole nother narrative, but there are ethnicities, there are backgrounds where people are more inclined, women are more inclined to be the of the feminine energy and happy to be in that space and let you take that lead.
Wait a minute. Did we just tell Mr. Butts that he needs to get a migrant? Or what do we do?
I'm just asking.
You know when they always say good guys finish last. Good guys really do finish last because at the end
of You've been talking about that.
Right? Yeah. Because at the end of the day, right, one thing a female always wants is a protector. Right? And so what was shown to us as we were little kids growing up in the realm of New York, right, is the fact that a gangster will always be a tough guy. Right? So because of that, they always gravitate towards the gangsters and the drug dealers and the scammers and all that because they feel as though those are the type of men out there that are able to protect them, that are able to sit there and confide to them, and that will sit there and, you know, bring that adrenaline rush when they talk to them.
One thing I learned in my life is sometimes you gotta express yourself, right? If you see a girl acting masculine, bring it to her attention, because, you know, like I said, because subconsciously she may not know what she's doing, because that's what she's been accustomed to her whole life, and she's doing what she saw. But sometimes they might not even know that they're acting that way, and you gotta tell her, pump your brakes, and like, hey, listen, why do you do this? Sometimes you gotta make them realize that they're bringing all this masculine energy.
Just as an encouragement, 25 years old, biology degree, working on going to, you know, like, bro, you doing your thing, right?
Yeah.
Just keep doing that. One thing I will encourage you is, at the end of the day, you will only become more marketable, more of a desire to women as you grow older, as long as you keep the path that you're on. It could be a frustration right now, but they will come full circle. At some point in time, nerds start ruling the world. At some point in time, those guys that were doing all the right stuff, it all swings back.
Yeah, you geek. So we're going to leave that right there. Oh. What? No, it's from C-Square. I was co-signing C-Square. What's the problem? Right now, we're going to have a special minute with Miss Minga. Miss Minga the Conqueror, what you going to say?
Thanks for having me. As always, the topic is, does size matter?
Wow.
There it is.
Okay. So I did a little bit of research from fertility.org. They asked to rate 3D computer-generated male bodies. Women in a new study preferred taller figures as well as those with larger penises. So do shorter men feel less confident, or do they feel that they have to, like, overcompensate for being short? Or is being short like a shortcoming? No pun intended.
Because we talk about height, right? Women always want somebody tall. We got this. We want 6 foot tall.
Not just tall. They, based on the research, they want men with bigger penis size.
But
there it is.
But again, because I remember from science classes and all these classes I took, the vagina is like, what, 5 inches deep? So, you know, if you a guy with any kind of girth, you're going to fill that up. Like, unless you just run around here with 3 inches, you know, what are we talking about here? Like, you're going to fill that up, you know?
And that's what I hear from most women, girth is what's more important for them than the length.
Mm-hmm. We talking about porno size things? Like, we talking about some horse stuff? Like, there's a certain point we got to get to before we call the fire department.
I've never had that complaint, thank God. But I don't know. I think it's more psychological than anything, because saying that you want a dude where size matters is like me saying, you know, I want good pee. I mean, that's kind of obvious.
Basically, like, I can sit here and talk about I want Beyonce and Halle Berry and all that, but, you know, like the song you should say.
You get what you get at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, Abigail Bucks?
Right, he said, you see, Mr. What Bucks. Mr. Bucks.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is, right, a female, right, they get what they get, right? Just like y'all, I've never had that complaint, right? Never had the complaint. But certain men probably don't sit there and probably don't have that advantage that, you know, other men do. So what they would have to do is they would have to compromise. There's always a compromise. There's always something that they would have to do differently in order to please the woman. So if they don't have...
Sound like you're talking about going to Red Lobster, bro.
Oh, nah. But it's like I said, me personally,
seafood,
I don't got that problem. You know what I'm saying? I got that problem.
You know, I mean, nothing wrong with Red Lobster. As long as it's a committed date, you know what I mean?
But this is my thing, though. I see football players getting cheated on and dumped. I see basketball players getting cheated on and dumped. Mm-hmm. Baseball players, same thing. And we talking about all these dudes is 6'2 and better.
It's true.
So at some point, like there's an old saying amongst men, you show me a pretty woman, I'll show you a guy who's tired of hitting it. It's probably true of women too. So
yeah. This is the contradiction of people, but we're specifically talking about women now. And if women want to solve one issue, we do need to talk about height. Because they did a survey recently and something like 92% of women, so we're talking about over 92% of women, said that they want a man who's 6'2 or better. Now, the average height for a dude is 5'9. So we're talking about 90% of men are about 5'9. So right now, if you're saying you want a dude 6'2, you've eliminated 90% of the men out there. So what are the chances you rolling the dice and you're going to get somebody 6'2", making a good salary? And that's another thing we can talk about. Like over 85, what about only about 15% of households right now are making decent money. So then now women want, you want girth, you want height, you want money. You're going to have to pick your point.
Kev, you look like you want to jump in here. So,
yeah. So what it is also... If you like me, I'm not tall. I'm 5'6", 5'7", maybe.
And you're
my confidence is taller than Shaq. My confidence is 8 feet tall.
There you go.
Women and Minga, you could put your information in there, but women smell confidence off of men. Yeah. You have to be confident. Right? They want, when you walk in the street with them and they see other women look at you and you confident and you like, this is my girl, and other girls looking, that turns the woman off. They have that confidence. That's what I believe.
Well,
Minga, and then, you know.
I want to come to Minga because you start.
I mean, they're all good looking guys too. That does also help. They ain't ugly.
Hold on. Because Biggie, black and ugly as ever. However,
stay Gucci down to the socks.
So hold on, Minga, we coming to you because you're a female here. Are you looking for girth? Are you looking for motion in the ocean? What is it for you?
Everything you just said is what women like. What I
you want a pizza with everything on it.
Don't dodge that.
Your girth, the motion in the ocean, everything. And I had a size chart, but I don't know if I was able to do that. But there is a size chart.
Wow.
Yeah, right?
It's a family show, Minga.
It's a family show, right? So there is a size chart. I think being, what is it? The average is what? 7? 6, 7?
Mm-hmm. Hey, average what? Average size?
Yes.
Okay, so this is my question for you. Which length is more important? The length of the D or the length of the sex?
This is such a good question. Nobody ever asked me that.
I just did.
There it is.
Wow. That's such a good question. I can't even answer that. That's such that's crazy. All right, because that's the most important. Because if you're not great, and it's that's a good question. Because it cannot, it could be the right tools, but it's not enough at the time, and not be set. It's not satisfying.
It's not fully charged.
Yeah, it's not fully. It's not fully charged. Okay. They have women who are aligned with men just because of these things. So a man could not take care of his kids and just be a loser, but they like the fact that they fit into that physical criteria in which we spoke of. So there are people who are aligned with each other. They're not supposed to be with each other, right? Because it's that, you know, they fit like the BBLs or whatever. It's just purely physical. But do you understand what I'm saying?
If it's not the length, if it's not the girth, if it's not the ocean of motion, it's got to be what Professor G said, take it to Red Lobster, right? It's got to be something, because at the end of the day, personality-wise is amazing, enjoying somebody's presence is amazing, but the number one aspect of a relationship, well, I wouldn't say number one, but one of the most important aspects of a relationship is what happens in between them sheets. If you can't get jiggy in them sheets, can't get jiggy anywhere else.
So I think the gist of this is, if you got a good size, you good. If you don't, have a good personality, chew lots of gum, get that jaw strength up.
And eat lots of scrimp.
Eat that scrimp. Know how to cook some corned beef hash. I don't know. Oh, man. And we got returning to us once again, the man who's taking on the one-man battle against funk. Mm. Making sure that people aren't smelling like ass and Pop-Tarts. Mm. We got Kev on fragrances. Kev, help these people out.
All right, we got the Don right here by Jerjaw. The Don. Name speaks for itself, right? Mm. This is a fragrance. This is more of a fragrance when you and your boys is hanging out, like a guy's night out, hanging out in the bar, a little lounge, you know. Has a little tobacco note, a whiskey note. They got a gunpowder note, which is like a mineral metallic note, and a sponge sugar. So it's a tobacco, whiskey, sweet, smoky, woody, caramel, warm, spicy, aromatic kind of fragrance. The art, the Abstracto perfume by Armand, right? So if anybody gone to Macy's and they smell Valentino Romo Born Intense, this is the dupe. Mm. $30. Mm. $30 you can get.
Like $30. Right?
Sounds like my price range.
Yeah, this, the main accords of this one right here is coffee, lavender, woody, spicy, warm, spicy, citrus, aromatic, musky, vanilla, fresh, spicy.
For the extracto, what kind of event would you recommend that for?
The extracto could be any day. It could be a boys' night out, going out just to hang out, date night, whatever. This is anything. Go to the office. This is an all you could wear all year round kind of favorites. This one right here is more winter, fall type of freak, because it's really strong, it's potent. But that's more, this one right here, the Dawn, is more like a guy's night out type of fragrance. It's not really a date night when you go with your girl. Because
I love the flavors you've been bringing to the set, the styles, the scents, the perfumes, the colognes. Right. But I'm trying to balance in my head what is all right for me to wear to work in like an office environment. Because I don't know that I want to walk in with that like a musky smell that like everybody knows I've been there when they walk into the room. They're like, hey, was C squared here? Because I can smell them. I don't want that kind of smell.
Hey, not in the office. You gotta be aware of how much sprays you put on, right? So me, I'm an oversprayer sometimes, right? But I know if there's a fragrance that's potent, I might put 2-3 sprays, 2 on the neck, back of the neck, boom. That's it.
So, okay. Yeah. So it's not about which scent. It's just about understanding it's strong with how often how much I spray before I head out.
Yeah. You definitely got to be aware of that, because You have a fragrance. I have a fragrance that one spray on my hand, and I was in the car, and I started getting a headache. I was like, oh man, I can't. Wow. You can't overspray on that. You know.
Did it have any fentanyl?
Say what?
Was it like a fentanyl cologne?
No. It's potent. Some of these oils and materials they put in there are like strong.
What was the price on the Dawn?
Yes.
The Dawn? Retail?
Mm-hmm.
$295. Ooh. Discounters. For this size bottle, the 100 ml is about $154 in discounters.
That sounds sexy.
Oh, it is.
Kev, you doing your own pod now? Give us where we can find you.
My videos on TikTok. And on TikTok, I'm known as Scent Syndicate. Scent Syndicate.
Can we put that in the chat that we did last time?
Sounds like a racketeering charge is coming, man.
Yeah, man. You know what I'm saying? I got my perfume posse in my perfume in my, you know, my scent mafia going
there. There it is.
Listen. There you guys have it. Right now, if you smell like weed, gym socks, and Axe body spray, that's a choice. Get up with the fragrance mafioso. So, see, we need this money advice, man. Help us out here. Get our pockets right.
All right. Listen, we're going to go right back to what is most important when it comes to money. And that is starting to build wealth. And we start to build wealth with home ownership. Home ownership. And when you're thinking about owning a home, buying a home, the most important, you know, variable that you've got to be in control of is your credit. So how is your credit? So what do I mean by that, and why is it important? So your credit score, just to start with all the basics for those of you who are not as familiar, maybe you're a little bit on the younger side. Your credit score drives this decision. It is a history. It is like a score that these three different credit agencies give you based on your track record of paying your bills, paying them on time, paying them off, etc. Right. And then also it's a question not just of how accurate you are and how good you are about paying your bills, but it's also tracks how much what we'll call revolving credit you have. If you have too much revolving credit, then that's going to hurt you as well. So what do I mean by revolving credit? That means credit cards. Store cards have a special kind of negative hit. So what do I mean by store cards? Like your Best Buy card, your Walmart card, your Target card. Those store cards, first off, they're going to charge you a premium for having that little logo on your card. They may give you a discount when you use the card at their store, but it's going to hurt you in the long run because that premium is a higher interest rate after the little grace period that they give you that entices you to take the card. So the more credit card debt you have as a percentage of all that you have access to can be a problem. You get over 30%, it's going to start dinging you. You get over 50%, it's really going to ding you. You get over 80%, you know, you're going to lose 100 points on your credit score. So that's kind of how that works.
Mm-hmm. Let me jump in for real quick because, you know, you always hear a lot of different things when it comes to how to get your credit score right. So, for instance, I hear if you have too many credit cards, that's a bad thing. But if you close a card, that's a bad thing. So how do you rationalize if you have too many cards, if I should close a card, should I keep them open? How do you figure that part out?
Yeah, that's a great question. Here's what I found in my own personal experience, because I've heard that before. And it does, right? If you close a credit card after paying it off, what you lose is the track record of having paid it off. So that hurts you a little bit. It also, you know, initially, like in the first 3 months, the credit card company is like, well, why'd you close it down? What's going on? What's the problem? But it bounces right back after like 2-3 months. So it's like a short term ding, you know, when you close off a credit card. If you're closing off a store credit card, it may even take less time before it bounces back. Okay. But that's kind of how that works. So let's talk about home ownership from a credit card perspective, credit score perspective. You really got to be at least 620 and above to even be in the conversation, 620 credit score and above to even be in the conversation of a fair rate on your mortgage and fair terms when you're going for a home mortgage. If you're at 680, the terms get a little bit better. 700. Now we're in the game, and you're starting to lean towards the best rates available. What I've found is 720, 740, 750 and above, you're pretty much going to be considered excellent credit, and you're going to have the opportunity to get the best rates, the best terms available, and really be in the bargaining position with the lender. The highest score is 850. If you can get over 780, 800, you just kind of walk in and say, hey, this is what I want, make it happen. Basically, because, and then obviously the other variable is income. And we can talk about this a lot. It depends on what you guys want to cover.
You got about 30 grand for everybody coming out of college, minimum. So how is that impacting your credit and your ability to buy a house? Because it automatically lowers your income, the fact that you have that.
A couple of different ways, right? One, it does count towards your revolving credit. So as long as that student loan is not on like some type of deferment, then that means you're paying that student loan on a monthly basis. It's going to be considered part of what you're responsible for and what's coming out of your household income on a monthly basis. So from a standpoint of qualifying for the loan and can you afford the house, that's how it's going to weigh in. From a credit score perspective, it's going to be part of your outstanding commitments that you're responsible for every single month. That being said, the interest rate on the school loan is usually the best rate you're going to have out there for the most part. It's going to be, you know, kind of under prime or whatever. So it's going to be a good rate in comparison to credit cards, which might be 20, 24, 28%. Your student loan is not going to be anywhere near that high. So that's one. Two is that there was talk, and we may revisit at some point in time in the future, where it's not fair to have student loan debt affect your ability to have, you know, to impact your credit score negatively, because you got the student loans because you were trying to better yourself, get your education so you can be more marketable and hopefully get more income. And while you're doing all of that, and then if somebody looks and says, wow, you know, you're an attorney, but you've got $158,000 in student loan debt, so I'm not going to give you any credit. It's kind of like a slap in the face. And so I think that that's been something that a lot of constituents go to their their politicians with, and there was talk of trying to loosen that standard. I really don't know where that's at this point, but I could look into it if it's really important to the listeners.
Is it better to get rid of these revolving cards prior to getting into home ownership so that you can have more financial freedom? And the second question I do have is that there are people who do not have school loans, who do not have revolving cards, and they have good credit, but they still can't purchase a home because of the down payment. So What can they do to avoid being house poor?
So it's interesting because having access to credit is a temptation. And in the short run, it will hurt your credit score as you're opening up new cards. But once you've had a card for a year and you've been able to pay consistently and or pay it off on a regular basis, mm-hmm. and maybe let it ride for zero balance for a while, you can have as many cards as you want because it shows you're managing the credit. It will hurt you for the first 6 to 12 months in your credit score, and then it'll actually go the exact opposite. It will help you. Let me tell you why I say that. Let's say you have month over month $2,500 in credit card debt. That, you know, it's a pretty sizable balance. It shows that you're not able to pay off all your debt right, you know, within the next month, which is where consumer would like you to be. But if you have $100,000 in available credit available to you through different credit cards, you add them all up, you could borrow up to $100,000. And right now you only have $2,500 used. That will actually help you because it shows you're only using 2.5% of your credit card debt. So it's interesting because one of the things that I personally did is I got my credit card, I got my credit score right, and I immediately went out and got a bunch of credit cards. And I got some high available balance, but I don't use it. I literally got the credit card, activated it, and threw it in the safe. Because what I wanted to do was just really level up my credit score so that I could be at the bargaining table, you know, whether it's buying a house, buying an investment property, buying a business. I just knew that, you know, look, your credit score drives the decision and it immediately sets you apart. Let's talk about that for a second. Then I'm going to go back to your second question. Go ahead.
I just want to pause for the audience. C Square said he uses credit cards to buy businesses. Let that soak in for a minute. So here's my question, C Square. If you have these high balance cards and you don't use them, does that have any kind of impact on your credit or you're good?
No, so what I do is I try to use them at least once or twice a year. Just a random, random purchase, you know, Amazon purchase, something like that. Just to show that, and I use it, and I immediately pay it down. Like, so if it's $17 purchase, something like that, I'll immediately pay it off the next month or whatever.
One quick question. So what's a good percentage of credit card debt you should have? You're saying 2%?
I would say anything under 10% is not going to hurt you.
Okay.
Anything under 10%. So if you have available credit, whatever available credit number is, if you can stay under 10%, then it's not going to hurt you. Anything over 10% starts to ping at you. And like I said, you get over 30, you get over 50, you get over 80, it starts to really hit your credit score in a big way. Now, of course, if you're late, more than 30 days late on any debt, boom, your credit score will slap. And not only will it slap you, but now it may take years to get that kind of removed from your history and be able to level back up. So you really just have to make sure, especially, look, if you can't pay it, you can't pay it. But what I find is some people are just absent-minded with their bills and they're late, but they had the money. You definitely don't want to get in that camp because now you're just shooting yourself in the foot, right? So that's the big thing. So to your other question, Mingo, I want to get back to you around qualifying for that home and having the down payment. So we talked about qualifying. The other variable that's really important in qualifying is your income and how your income compares to the debt of taking on that house. We'll get to that in a second. But as far as the down payment,
DTI.
So I want to get to that in a second. For the down payment, just recognize, yes, if you're buying your first home, the standard deal is 20% down. But, which could be a lot, especially depending on where you live in the country, it could be a lot of money. But if you're, if it's the first time you're buying a home, which means you haven't purchased a home in the last 5 years, if you haven't purchased a home in 5 years, you're considered a first home buyer. I don't know why, but that's how it works. And if you have not purchased a home, then you can qualify, especially if you're going to move into the house yourself, then you can qualify for a reduced down payment at 3% instead of 20%. It's a big difference, a game changer. If the house you're trying to buy is $300,000, 20% is $60,000, 3% is $9,000. That's a big difference. And you can get into that house and start making things happen for yourself. The reason that lenders want you to have as much skin in the game. They want you to have as big of a down payment as possible because it reduces their risk. But politicians have worked together with lenders to create these opportunities to get more people home ownership. And the FHA loan is what I just described. Fair Housing Association is how you get access to that reduced down payment and that. The last thing I'll say on this piece, I know we got to move on to some other things, is there's also lenders out there that want to do their share and demonstrate that they are actively working towards the Community Reinvestment Act, which was passed way back in like 1977. And that Community Reinvestment Act is challenging banks and lenders to make money more accessible to communities that are regularly underserved or to investors and home buyers that might not traditionally be able to have access to that capital. And so there's things that, you know, there may be down payment assistance with a major lender. There may be opportunity to get closing cost assistance, etc. So it's a really, really good deal. I want to make sure that you are aware of that. I think we're going to pause right here. We're going to hit that income ratio at a future visit, and then we're going to really talk about leveling up and why home ownership is a game changer when it comes to building wealth.